Hello there and greetings. It's Business Life 360 After Hours. I'm your host, Christy Kay, and this is the podcast where we take that deep breath and that deeper dive into the real lives, experiences, and perspectives of success-driven people. We are going to tackle real-life topics at the intersection of business and life after the workday, when we're theoretically off the clock. That's when After Hours picks up, because that's when the convergence of life moments and the workday truly shows up. It is, after all, After Hours. Our topic on this episode of Business Life 360 After Hours is when loss leads to life purpose. This podcast episode is for anyone who's looking for hope, needs a fresh perspective, feels lonely, at a loss, or is looking for greater life purpose. And for you, we have the perfect guest who lost his daughter at age 19 and started a business on life purpose. So life surprises us, and it moves us, and it shows up in big ways when we're on cruise control. It presents unexpected turns that, if we're looking, will transform us. Our guest is someone who has changed thousands of lives for the better. He's given me a fresh perspective, and he's made me think differently about my life path. And he makes people feel better, having met him. It's Dr. Vic Strecker. He's the founder and chief purpose officer of Kumanu, a company that helps build stronger, healthier lives and communities. He's a professor at the University of Michigan, and he's an author. And if there's one person who knows about our topic, which is building a life purpose after loss, it is he. Dr. Vic Strecker, welcome to Business Life 360 After Hours.
Hey, thank you. I'm really looking forward to this conversation, Christy.
It is so fun to have you here, and you have been just such an inspiration to so many people, and you've propelled so many other people to find purpose in their lives. And I know this movement you've started, it's kind of like a lifestyle, it's a game-changing way to make humans live better. Wow, that's very powerful.
Thank you.
So in our lives, there's often one event or a moment or something that happens that gives us a before and a during and an after. And everything that happens thereafter is kind of like centered around that event. So tell us about your life and what that particular event was for you.
The event was not a happy one. It was the loss of our daughter, Julia, who at the time was 19 years old. This is 10 years ago. And she was born healthy. She used to like to say I was born a 10 out of 10. And then about 6 months into her life, we're on a sabbatical, a research leave in the Netherlands, when she started getting, she started losing weight. And that's not a good thing typically for a baby. And it turns out that she had caught a virus, a standard chickenpox virus, really. And that chickenpox virus, which usually just causes, you know, a fever and, you know, a little bit of illness for a few days, this chickenpox virus actually attacked her heart and destroyed her heart. And the muscle was totally ruined. And I remember the doctor in the Netherlands turning to us, and he said, she doesn't have more than 3 months to live. And you should just take her home because there's nothing we can do for her. And I'll never forget that night. It was very late at night. My wife and I were with our baby. And taking her out of the hospital when she wasn't fixed was a weird thing, knowing how sick she was. And I remember asking the doctor at the time, is there anything we can do, anything? Through my tears, I was just saying, do heart transplants work for kids like that? And he said, no, we don't do those here, and it wouldn't help her. You should just go home, go back to the United States, and let her die in peace. We hopped on a plane and went back to the U.S. And we put her in a hospital right away, of course. And after about a week, they took a look, they did a lot of tests, and they said, you know, actually, she might be eligible for a heart transplant. There have not been any done. And they said, but we have a new heart transplant surgeon from Stanford, and he's been hoping to do a transplant, and she might be eligible for that. There was another child waiting for a heart, and she died before a heart came. And even after she gets a new heart, her chance of living to the age of five, that's 50% as well. But if you put yourself in our place and you have this child and she's dying and her only hope is to get a heart transplant, we decided, like I think most people might think in the way we did, yeah, let's do this. Mm-hmm. So we listed her, and she became the first child in the southeastern part of the United States to get a new heart. And when that happened, we knew that she may not live, you know, a normal life span. So we started living every day of her life as if it might be her last day. And one thing that we realized was that we could live our lives that way as well. Why not? I mean, why not live our lives as if every day might be the last, that we might be hit by a truck or whatever? We don't know. Mm-hmm. No one knows how long you're going to live. And in a way, what we found was this death hanging over us, you know, this potential death was life's change agent. It was a way to start thinking about our lives in a new way.
Mm-hmm. And it was ever present, of course, in your daily
yes.
lives. And
absolutely.
What about siblings for Julia? Did she
yeah.
have siblings?
Well, she has an older sibling, an older sister, Rachel. And, you know, what happens very often when you have siblings of a very sick or chronically ill child, they often get lost in the shuffle. And that's a really hard thing to avoid because Julia was often sick. She'd often have to go to the hospital. She might get an infection. And ultimately, when she was 9 years old, she needed a new heart. Because one thing we found is that hearts have shelf lives. A lot of these, you know, these hearts kind of give out after a while. The drugs actually cause that. And her immune suppression can cause that. So she ended up going through a really precarious time where she, once again, almost died. We came very close to death. And Rachel had to live through all this, which is really difficult. Mm-hmm. I will say now, Rachel is an awesome 35-year-old with two amazing children, one, the oldest daughter named Madeline Julia. And our daughter, Rachel, is the vice president for storytelling at the National Geographic. And I think she's developed that neat life through this experience she had with her sister, her younger sister.
Yes, indeed. And I know, you know, they say, Vic, that people come into your life for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. And I feel like with both of your daughters, you've had that experience where they've each taught you so much and they've taken away so much from this experience with Julia. And tell us more, yeah. too, about that.
You know, Julia was an amazing girl. And she just was. Other people would say that, too. I know I'm biased, but she really was an impressive person. She had such a deep soul. And after she had her second heart transplant and came very near death, she decided at a really early age that she wanted to be a nurse. She wanted to give back. And so her purpose was to give back by being a nurse. She wrote that in her letter, which I didn't even know, in her letter applying to the nursing school at the University of Michigan, and she got in. She, her freshman year, she was working really hard, but at the same time, really struggling with her health. And we took her to the Caribbean on spring break just to warm up. Our third day in, we were all sitting around what we call the gathering place, our dinner table. And, you know, one of the things that we learned through our whole experience with Julia is that being at the dinner table was special. We didn't just sit in front of a TV and eat and, you know, watch TV or zone out. We would sit at the dinner table and talk about our day. We would talk about, you know, what we were doing, what happened, our emotions at the time. It was a very special time. So in this case, the dinner table, the gathering place, was out on the beach during spring break. And as we were leaving dinner and walking back to our room, she turned to us and said, you know, I am so happy right now that I could die. And that night she did. We have no idea why she said those things to us. She had just been checked out and was fine. And she didn't tell us she was feeling badly. But that night, she died of a massive heart attack. So when that happened, our lives changed. And I know this is kind of a long-winded story, and it's maybe sad to people, but I want to say I've now given talks to over 100,000 people since she has died. And I've had many, many, many dozens of people come up and express their own grief over their own losses. So anyway, that's what I've been doing since she died, trying to help other people who have gone through tragedies as well.
You just pointed something out, too, that we're all living in this world now. There's a prevalence, you know, in this pandemic of us as humans carrying loss, carrying mental health issues every day with us, whether it's depression or loneliness, isolation, hopelessness, anxiety, whatever it may be. And there's an author named Elizabeth Lesser, who I know you are aware of, and she's identified this term called broken open. And I really appreciate that term, because I feel like as you, Dr. Strucker, went through all of these dark hours that you went through with your family and regarding the sadness with Julia, how did you not go and stay down that path of hopelessness? And was there a point where fear and despair just overtook you and your wife and your older daughter?
Christy, I'm so glad you brought up Elizabeth Lesser's book. I would so recommend this book. This book was sent to me about a month after Julia died, and I was really, really struggling at the time. And this book was about loss. And it could be loss of a job. It could be loss of a marriage. It could be loss of a loved one. But whatever that loss was, it can create this feeling that you're just broken open. And I started realizing this is the breaking of the ego. Your defensiveness, your ego is basically kind of your mental immune system. You know, if people, it's helpful if people come up and say, you know, you're not a good person or whatever, you know, we have this ego wall that defends us. Or if we have a certain political persuasion, somebody disagrees with us, our ego wall gets thicker and thicker. And now I would argue that our ego walls are incredibly thick, right? But when you lose somebody or lose a job, lose a loved one, get sick, whatever those things are, lose your health, for example, you start getting broken open. That ego wall breaks, and you start seeing a little more clearly in a way. If you kind of embrace that fact that your ego is broken, you say, okay, what can I see that's real now? And maybe what you see that's real are the things that matter most in your life. But one thing I realized, that the things that were most important to me weren't things. They were people, and they were causes. One cause was my belief that the world is gradually losing its purpose and direction in life. And I wanted, so my cause is to help people find greater direction and purpose. Mm-hmm. And now with COVID, as you say, mental health problems have increased. We now know, and this is something that I study at the university and at our business, Kumanu, we have a wonderful poll that we've been doing for the last 2 years with the Harris poll. And we found that depression rates have literally tripled since the beginning of COVID, tripled. Mm. I conduct a depression screener with my students at the University of Michigan. 60% of my students screen positive for depression at a moderate to severe level. Now, if you are screened that way in a primary care office, that doctor is going to send you to a psychiatrist or some sort of mental health professional and or prescribe drugs for you. Mm. I mean, it's serious.
Mm, it's daunting.
And 60%, 6 out of 10 of my students screen positive for moderate to severe depression.
You previously had shared with me a moment on Father's Day in a boat.
Yeah.
Will you share that with us? Because that is something that I can't get over, the way that you were able to kind of find hope again.
A few months after Julia had died, I went up to northern Michigan to a cottage we have right on Lake Michigan. And, you know, we were told by a grief counselor, you need to go on your own path, your own journey. You need to respect the other person's journey, which is really important. But at the same time, you have to go on. This journey is a very private journey. So I went up to northern Michigan, and my journey for a while was drinking too much alcohol and eating too much and feeling sorry for myself. So one night, somebody sent me a book of poetry by a 15th century Persian poet named Rumi. I was not a poetry person, but suddenly Rumi's poems was amazing. And I read one just as I was going to sleep, and it said something like, "The secrets, your dreams at dawn have secrets to tell you. Don't go back to sleep." And sure enough, the next morning I had this hyper vivid dream of being in this old town, basically a Dutch town, really, in the Netherlands. And it was an ancient town, and I was rollerblading with my daughter. Suddenly we saw this big, beautiful, shining building. It was like a church or a mosque or a synagogue or something. It was just gleaming, and it was this beautiful pink marble that was glowing. And my daughter Julia turned to me, and she was very young in my dream, and said, "We need to go there." Then got into the room, and there was this endless stairway that went down, down and down and down. She said, "We need to go there." And so we kept rollerblading down this spiral staircase to this big, beautiful hall. And in this hall, there were three women, and they were beautiful women, and they had these pretty dresses on. And suddenly I turned to my daughter, and my daughter was suddenly 19 years old, and she had one of these beautiful dresses on. She said, "I have to go, Dad." And she turned and went, and she disappeared with these three angels or whoever. And I woke up suddenly, and I remembered Rumi's poem, "Your dreams in the morning have secrets to tell you. Don't go back to sleep." And it was 5 in the morning. It was about 50 degrees outside, and I ran out just in my boxers and t-shirt, and I jumped in my kayak, and it was perfect, glassy, smooth water. It was still dark, and it was foggy, and it was freezing cold, and I started just paddling as fast and hard as I could straight out toward Wisconsin. Suddenly I found myself about 2 miles out, and I was out of breath, and the sun started coming up. I turned toward the sun because I kept thinking, you know, maybe I'm just going to keep going. And I turned toward the sun that was coming up, and everything, maybe it was off the icy water, I don't know what happened, but suddenly everything around me started glowing. And I felt my daughter in me. I have no clue what happened, but I felt my daughter in me, and she was saying, "Dad, you have to get over this because you're at a crossroads right now." And I realized that. I was literally, there might have been this sign that said death and life. And I had this crossroads that I had to choose. At that moment, in this perfectly smooth water, way, way out, I could barely see the shore, I decided to turn back. And then I settled down at the kitchen table, and I started looking down on myself, and it was still super early in the morning. And I said, "Vic, you're in trouble." I was looking down on myself as if I had to be a therapist of myself. And that turned out to be really important. And so I pulled out a piece of paper, and with a pen, I just wrote down the things that mattered most to me. I just started that way. I had no idea why. I just started writing down the things that mattered most. And I wrote down my family. I wrote down my students. I started writing down a bunch of things, my science, my research. But then I decided to set a goal around those things. So in terms of my students, for example, the university had said, "You don't have to teach this semester. You don't have to teach next semester. Yeah. Really, we're giving you as much time as you need." But I decided I'm going to teach every one of my students now as if they're Julia, as if they're my own daughter. And as soon as I could that morning, I called the university and said, "I know you've given me time off now, but with all respect and all gratitude, that's the worst advice that I could get. What I need to do is go back and teach. And I'm going to teach these students in a new way, in a way I've never done before.
I love that. I love that you know, that was that morning. I'm telling you, that was that morning, and that day was pivotal. You know, you want to talk about, I mean, my goodness.
My whole life.
From the dream. Thank you for sharing that dream. Oh, my goodness. That sharing the dream and the kayak journey and the moment in time where I think really that was your moment. That was the moment that your purpose seed was totally planted. It was your game-changing moment for the rest of your life, I feel like, in so many respects, in terms of really taking that feeling of loss and despair and saying, okay, this I can no longer be passive. I need to really move. And how were you able to really change that loss into purpose and into meaning?
Well, you know, for me personally, I hit that low. And I started feeling like, wow, I just chose to live. Mm-hmm. And the act of choosing to live, the act, that autonomous act that I felt, I have agency. We call it in psychology human agency. I have choice now. And I have chosen to live. Now I am playing with house money. Mm-hmm. Now I am no longer, you know, playing with my own money. I'm not worried anymore. I am basically, this is all gravy. This is now dessert. That's mm-hmm. the rest of my life.
Yeah, that is so pivotal in so many ways.
It's important.
Yes.
Yeah.
And your purpose from there really, I will use the word exploded. I mean, from there,
I feel
like it's sort of like this, that tiny, tiny snowball rolling down the mountain. I mean, obviously it just became huge. And I know that you've had, you know, the start of Kamanu. And
breakthroughs. Yeah, well, I did a lot of things.
Yes.
I created Kamanu, which is Maori for nourish and cherish, and that's a company that has built an application called Purposeful that's designed to help people find greater purpose and meaning, to live more intentionally, to live more with agency. So
I use it every day. I use it every day.
That's so nice.
It's fabulous.
Yeah, and I've written a few books. One is called On Purpose. One is called Life on Purpose. And that's changed people as well. I just had a wonderful message from a woman who's the CEO and founder of Indigo, which is the largest book company in Canada. And she said, I just finished reading Life on Purpose. It's extraordinary. And we want you to reprint the book, and we're going to sell it and promote it at all of our bookstores throughout Canada. And it's, you know, that feels very good to have done that.
Oh, that's congratulations on that. And, you know, I think to me, what that tells me, obviously, which I've known about you and about your writings and your experiences, is that you have really discovered how much people need what you're offering regarding purpose and discovering one's own purpose.
You know, whether I offer it or somebody else, you know, a person who's offered this to many, many multiples more than I have is Viktor Frankl, who had gone through 3 concentration camps during World War II, and he discovered that prisoners in those concentration camps who weren't murdered outright, who had a transcending purpose, who still had a direction in their lives, could literally grow from the experience, the horrible experiences that people had in these concentration camps. And he wrote, you know, a number of amazing books, but one in particular, Man's Search for Meaning, has reached millions of people and helped millions of people in their lives. If I can help a fraction of that number of people, I'll be very grateful and happy and feel like I've lived a good life. So, this is, I'm not sure what's more important than that.
I think you've reached it.
I
agree. I mean, I think what you just said, you've arrived at that. One of my questions is going to be, have you arrived? And I think you just answered that, because you've arrived in terms of that. You've hit that sweet spot of really finding your purpose.
We all want to make some difference, I think, deep down. You know, maybe some people may go, well, I don't want to. That's fine. But I kind of doubt that. I think it's a human drive to want to make a difference, because I think it's actually evolutionary.
You know, it's funny we're talking about this, because you're a scientist and you've had so much, I'll call it spiritual intervention in this journey
kind
of yours.
Strange, I must say.
Right?
Yeah.
And how do
I
you
never
explain
expected that?
Right. How do you explain this? And how does this, does purpose find each of us? Or do we, you know, you kind of just, did you go looking for purpose, or did it just find you?
I don't know. I mean, I am a scientist, so I like to think that these things tend to happen by chance. But I may be wrong, you know. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I wonder, you know, a good friend of mine recently told me, you know, Vic, you've lived the worst life and the best life of anybody I know. And I just think, wow, it's almost like I'm living in a simulation, and maybe we all are. Who knows? I have no idea.
I'm pretty agnostic about that. Right. Well, I think this is true. You know, some of us, some of our listeners now, I mean, they may be going through a great loss as you did.
Yeah.
A death of a loved one, a divorce, a job loss, so many iterations, so many scenarios here that we could define.
Yeah.
And, you know, by default, that kind of tosses each of us who are going through that maybe into this search for more and for purpose or something greater than what's in our world right now. Or maybe it's, you know, some people are transitioning right now and trying to find fulfillment at work or in a relationship, or they're relocating and, you know, pausing for some kind of a future change, but they don't know what it's like because they don't have that clarity. If these listeners of ours or any of us are feeling empty or non-purposeful, and if we're not really compelled to draw or, you know, to draw on a life that's really calling us to purpose, then how on earth do we begin to plant seeds, or where do we begin to really move in the direction of purpose?
I like to start by literally what I did when I came back from on my little kayak tour on Lake Michigan, which is sit down and with a piece of paper, write by hand the things that matter most to you. And as you are writing them down, you might look back on them and ask, can I set a goal around some of those things? We all know that setting a goal, it might be as little as a checklist this weekend. You know, as we go into a weekend, we might create a checklist, or we might during a weekday create a checklist of things we need to do. We know we're more likely to do something if we have a checklist. We might, if we're kids, set a goal of swimming underwater and touching the other side of the swimming pool. You know, we know that we'll swim underwater farther if that's our goal, even if we don't hit it. By the way, you know, purposes are aspirational. You don't necessarily have to reach your goal, but it motivates you.
Mm-hmm.
And so setting goals, though, around things that matter most in our lives becomes a purpose. And once you have that purpose or set of purposes, you might have a work purpose in your life. You might, and by the way, I find that people set purposes in their work that are related to any kind of job. I mean, if Mike Rowe has this wonderful series on television called Dirty Jobs, where he interviews people who have the apparently the worst jobs in the world, and yet these people find great purpose and meaning through their work. That's wonderful.
That's so such a great example. It's such a great example.
Can.
Yes, because what is it that matters most in our lives? And it's fulfilling to someone else, maybe not to you, but to that person.
We spend most of our working hours at work, right? Most you know, adults spend most of their work, waking lives at work. So thinking about what kind of purpose you could achieve through your work can be really important. How about your purpose with your family, if you have a family, with friends, with your community? So think about what matters most. Think about what causes you care about. That's another. I like to also use, it sounds morbid, but the headstone test. And this really was motivated by our daughter, Julia. When she needed that first heart transplant, I started thinking, what would I want to have written on my headstone if I were to die?
Whoa.
When we start thinking about our own death, like I said, it's life's change agent in a way. It creates greater contrast to our lives. So we start thinking, wow, what would I want my legacy to be like? What would I want people to say at my memorial service? So those are maybe ways to get started.
I really like that in terms of writing what matters most, because I feel like really when we start writing, it's probably going to be maybe a shorter list than we would have thought as we started out. And if you really start to prioritize that list, it's like, okay, there aren't that many things that I really want to put my time into, but I want to go deep with those things that I do want to put my time into.
Well, there are also things that you realize, wow, why am I spending so much time on social media or hearing what Kim Kardashian is wearing, you know, or whatever it is. You know, I'm just picking on her. She's maybe a very nice person. I just don't care what she's wearing. That's all. And why should I? Why should I care about all the things going on? I think social media, to some extent, is taking us away from our true purposes.
Well, you get me going when we start talking about social media and that demise of sort of, you know, go refer yeah. back to previous conversation about depression, loneliness, etc. So I really do like what you're saying so much about sort of that what matters most thing and that list and really really digging in. And I wanted to say, too, when we travel down that road and we're exploring purpose and what life or health benefits might start to emerge, how is it then that you think that we can really start to love unconditionally, start living with clarity, start, you know, being more intentional? Are there other benefits to that? Is that really kind of where we're headed with that?
Once you have a purpose in life, then you start realizing, wow, I need to take good care of myself so that I can live that life of purpose. So, for example, if I'm going to teach every one of my students as if they're my own daughter, and by the way, I don't. I do my best to do that. It's a goal that I set. But ask my students. Many of them would say, oh, he doesn't do that. But I try to. And that means if a student needs to reach me, if they have a problem, a personal problem, if they are having trouble, if they're sputtering in some way, and they reach out to me, one of the things I think about is, what would I want a professor to do for my own daughter? And I stop and say, okay, in that case, hey, I'll have a coffee with you. Come on over. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever. I will find the time. In order to do that, I need energy. So I walk to work. I meditate every day. And I also try to sleep well. I try to be creative every day. I try to eat well. Mm-hmm. All of those things I do so that I have more energy. And it's not for me necessarily. It's so I have the energy for this set of purposes that I have in my life because I want to live a big life. There are certain things that you might enjoy that you gonna want to get really good at. Can you develop any superpowers during this time of COVID? I learned to make bread, you know, for example. There's certain things that I just learned to do. There's certain programs. I analyze data. I'm a researcher, so I learn new analytic techniques.
Perfect.
With data. I hope that people think about all of these times of difficulty as also some opportunities to develop some superpowers.
That's ideal. I love that. And I wanted you to give our listeners a takeaway nugget on when unexpected loss leads to life purpose. What is one thing they can take with them to say, okay, this is what I need to be thinking about, or this is kind of a perspective from Dr. Vic Strecker?
If you can start feeling like you have a choice, that you have a choice in getting better or not, it is truly your choice. And that agency, along with some intentionality every morning, you know, like we wake up and we say, well, it's snowing outside. What's the temperature? Okay, I might wear that coat. Thinking about your day every day in a way that you might think about the weather, and you might say, well, I have a lot of meetings today, or I'm going to have a lot of stress today. I better have that difficult conversation with my spouse today, or whatever you're doing, you start living a little more intentionally. I'm going to start preparing for that. How do I live the biggest life that I can in this brief period that we're on this planet? We'll live bigger and happier lives.
Wow. Powerful, very powerful perspective. And I think I've got a couple of takeaway nuggets myself from you, and I think many of them. Light drives out darkness, and really focusing myself for personal growth on looking for the light and the signs that are there in our lives, and really going and paying attention to what matters most.
And we can create our own light, too.
And that sometimes is lost on us when we go through something like great loss. And I think that, you know, once we keep that top of mind, we can find that life purpose that you so eloquently define for us. So Dr. Vic Strecker, tell us how we can find you. Tell us more about your books, your website, courses,
sure.
App.
The application is, it's called Purposeful. My book, I have two books. One is called On Purpose, and the other is called Life on Purpose. On Purpose is a graphic novel, and Christy, I guess you were just reading it.
I sure was.
Life on Purpose is a book with words in it, as my editor from HarperCollins says. And I think you can get those at on Amazon or other places. I also have a massive open online course. It's free, and it's called Finding Purpose and Meaning. It's through Coursera. And if you go to Coursera.org, just look up my name, Vic Strecker, or you look up purpose or whatever, you'll find my course pretty easily. And it's a really simple four-week course. And now over 150,000 people from around the world have taken the course. And I think, you know, I get a lot of positive feedback from that. People, I think it has changed a lot of lives. So that's what I'm working on. I'm working on a children's book right now with an amazing former student of mine who is an incredible artist and illustrator, professional artist and illustrator in New York City. So working with her on a children's book and, working on a whole bunch of other things, too.
Well, we want to have you back on once that children's book comes out, and anytime you want to come back on, you are welcome on the podcast. And Dr. Vic Strecker, thank you so much. My goodness, thank you for being on Business Life 360 After Hours, for transforming us, for turning unexpected loss into purpose, and for making humans better at this thing called life.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun.
Find success by your own definition at your intersection of business and life on my next podcast, Business Life 360 After Hours. Thanks for joining us. I'm Christy Kay.
Business Life 360 After Hours is hosted and produced by Christy Kay. Audio engineering, production, and editing by Chris Pfeiffer. Be sure to join Christy for her award-winning television series, Business Life 360, the third Thursday of the month on WGTE-HD or at WGTE.org/B360. Business Life 360 After Hours is a production of WGTE Public Media.